Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
We're not just gonna look ahead, we're gonna look far ahead as the European Union is already preparing its next big research and innovation chapter, the 10th Framework Program, or FP10 for short, where it defines how it will invest and, more importantly, how it will compete globally, which was emphasized yesterday on the stage several times. Which digital sectors will dominate beyond 2030? Will it be 6G, chips, quantum, cloud, AI, a lot of interesting topics which will affect directly all of our futures. So to moderate this exciting and fruitful topic, let's welcome on the stage our dear moderator, with your applause, the chairman of the board of the 6G Smart Networks and Services Industry Association. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Colin Wilcock. Welcome, Colin. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Your seat is reserved.
Thank you, not for overselling it. Well, that's really good.
You have to keep a line. Yes, next up, the Marketing and Business Development Vice President and Member of the Management Board of LMT, Latvia's mobile operator and tech innovation company, Ingmars Pūtis. Good morning. We welcome the Staff Project Manager for Cloud Ecosystem at IONOS, the cloud solutions and web hosting company, Ali Nikugar. Welcome, Ali. Happy to see you. Your seat is right over there. Next up, he is the head of the Future Connectivity Systems Unit at the European Commission, Miguel González Sancho. Welcome. Nice to see you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And let's welcome on the stage the deputy chair of the board of the Cambridge Wireless, a membership organization for companies involved in research, development, and application of wireless and associated technologies, Sylvia Liu. Welcome, Sylvia. All right, Colin, we can start.
Oh, it's my turn now, is it? Oh, okay. Welcome, everyone. So I'm not sure we can quite match the billing of an exciting entertainment unless we change to karaoke or something. I suggest, certainly on my part, that wouldn't be a good idea. But let's try and cover what we were meant to cover, which is really trying to think about how can we achieve some of the aspirations that were mentioned on the other stage yesterday and today. So I think everyone's aware that these digital technologies, this quantum, cloud, 6G, AI, that these are vital for the future competitiveness of Europe. We need access to these technologies, but preferably we would actually be driving or involved in their development. And possibly we have some unique views from Europe in terms of what does it mean to protect personal data? What do we mean by security? Some values, if you will, from the European side that we want to try and make sure are encoded or encapsulated in these new technologies. There's another good reason to be involved there. And yet, when we look at the landscape today, we're not in a great position. If we look at major AI players, if we look at major world-class cloud players, if we look at major microelectronic players, you'll struggle to make a strong case for anything from Europe. So how can we achieve that aspiration for Europe to actually be a player in these areas? And how can we leverage the few areas where we do have some strength, like, for example, telecoms, where we have two out of the three major vendors? How can we actually use that to our advantage? And how can we use that new research program, this FP10? What do we need to do there to actually regain technology leadership for Europe? So that I hope we can spend half an hour or so discussing. Obviously, we're going to come up with all the solutions and then we can give that to the European Commission and everything will be wonderful. So that's what we're trying to do. Ingmars, please, your view on this.
Good morning. Well, first of all, I think always there are two parts of the story. One is the facts.
Forgive me, could you maybe, maybe introduce yourself a bit more broadly and who you're representing first. Forgive me, that was my mistake.
Thank you. I'm very much a local guy. I'm a member of the board of largest telecoms and ICT company here in Latvia. Coming from strictly mobile operations, we have now become a tech co. And actually, that happened because of our looking and wondering for usefulness of 5G. That's how it came about. And Summit also initiated back in the day this event as a territory, because back in the day, everybody was fantasizing about the 5G, but as we joked, no one needs it because no one had seen it. So therefore, that sent us on a journey of lots of experimentation together with customers and universities and partners outside of Latvia, actually looking for something useful. And that's how we came about right now. And actually, we do feel quite competitive. I don't feel bad comparing ourselves to the rest of, I don't know, Europe or United States. Our customers here in Latvia are the most mobile data consuming souls on the planet, or between the OECD countries, even crazier than Finnish people. And that was because of the reshaping of the financial model and pricing and investment model. And today as well, if you many things we do here, we actually host our United States partners here, because we are doing stuff it's much harder to do in the United States than in our test beds here. So our takeaway from that is that being practical is something that we can do, even though being smaller. I mean, probably in Europe, it's not so easy to pull together the gravity of the corporations they're having in the States. And we're always being bullied that Europe is not seen in top 25 corporations on the planet anymore. But same thing, last year we were revisiting all the top guns in the Silicon Valley on AI, and they were all throwing money and investing billions and billions and billions in infrastructure, but they were all crying for use cases. So there is still very low rate of revenue generating big size use cases for regaining all the money thrown into the AI. So your usability is something that no one can stop us. I mean, that's definitely up to us, and that is probably our point. That was the thing in the 5G, starting to do something practical, and that's the same thing goes for the 6G or AI in the future.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Perfect. Ali, maybe I could ask you to introduce yourself a bit more broadly and also then give your view on the question, sir.
Hi, my name is Ali Nikukar. I'm a technical manager from IONOS, from the Department of Research and Innovation. We are discovering in our department, we are discovering the possibilities to collaborate with the European solution to build up real the sovereignty in European market and European solution. In IONOS, we have like 6 million customers, 32 data centers, and 100,000 servers. And we are somehow competitor with the hyperscalers, but we are not cloning them and we are not following their direction. We strategically focused on the infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, and left this software as a service to our partners. So they are developing the software as a service for our customers. Our focus and value proposition in terms of, instead of scaling and vendor lock, is trust and being compliance with the AI Act, Data Act, GDPR, and transparency. That's why we gain more customers, especially after this situation of administration in the US. More and more customers are coming to our cloud, and they are believing European solution. Even we have outside of EU customers trusting our solution, because they cannot host their solution on premises, and they don't trust these hyperscalers, and they have this fear. So we have more and more visibility and more customers. But this cannot be alone. We don't have enough investment in Europe for cloud, and we cannot compete with hyperscalers just saying that we are GDPR compliance cloud. I think the solution can be marketplace, for example, for cloud companies or cloud solutions, to collaborate together to have a multi-cloud scenario so our customers be able to freely plan where the data, their data will live and where they can migrate it. So the sovereignty, for my definition, is not just migrate whatever you have from AWS or Azure to our cloud, is to give them freedom to migrate partly or plan for the future. They are not vendor locked. If they want to come back on premises, they should be able to do it. That's the vision we have in our company, and that's the value we propose to our customers to use it. So I hope we will be successful in the near future, and this value is more and more understood by our customers, and we can see from our stock price. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Wonderful to hear about your stock price. I guess you'll be retiring fairly soon then with all your stock options. Lucky we still managed to keep you for the panel. Thank you, sir. Miguel, maybe you'll be kind enough to introduce yourself and your point of view on this.
Okay, thank you, Colin. So good morning. My name, so as it was said, Miguel González Sancho, work in the European Commission in the department which is in charge of technology policy, basically, where we are responsible for important number of European pieces of legislation in the area of digital, and also a significant budget of different programs actually to support digital developments. And I work more specifically in the area of connectivity innovation. So regarding my point of view in a couple of minutes, going back to the description of the session, where does Europe stand in technology? So I won't repeat what Draghi and Letta and others said. The European Union is a bit lagging behind China and the United States, not to mention them on most of the key leading technologies these days, artificial intelligence. Cloud and others, and in connectivity, Europe is doing better, but with worrying signs, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily going in the right direction when seen at the evolution there. So indeed, we need to leverage on that strength, but without being complacent by no means. So in terms of digital competitiveness and innovation, this is right at the top of the agenda for the European Union these days. I would say that the triangle that is there always mentioned these days is data processing and artificial intelligence. So there's legislation and lots of funding into all that. I won't go into all the all the specifics of pieces of legislative proposals and lots of funding which is being mobilized to support artificial intelligence on chips and high performance computing and so on and so forth. Then connectivity and all that. I will quote Vice President Bricouning this morning, some minutes ago. I was glad to hear that connectivity is the basis for all innovation. That's what she said. And it was not me or my department putting that in her speech. I think she generally, also from where she comes, she truly believes in that. And Vice President von Leyen mentioned in her State of the Union speech in September, she stressed the point. She said it's absolutely vital that we get to a true telecoms internal market. And Draghi, he stressed it it was clear in his report how much connectivity is key to future competitiveness. So we're talking about infrastructure and services here, infrastructure which is increasingly virtual, but still you need a lot of physical infrastructure. Huh? You need cables on the ground, in the sea, you need spectrum, yeah? That's also a physical resource. So getting to the point now, digital innovation competitiveness is a priority for the European Union. So in practice, what does it mean? Traditional instruments that are used to advance priorities are legislation and funding. So we're here to talk funding. In July, the Commission made a proposal for the new multi-annual financial framework, so from 2028 to 2035. So that includes everything, the whole EU budget, you know, going from agriculture to stuff, including defense, which these days is something quite quite important. And these included, in particular, a couple of programs that are relevant to discussion today, the European Competitiveness Fund and FP10. Okay. So to put things in context, we're talking the proposal is for almost 2 trillion euros. Yeah, it's big money, of which 234 would go to the European Competitiveness Fund, and within that, 20 billion would be for digital, quite significant. And FP10, it would be 175 billion euros in the proposal of the Commission, so this is roughly double of today for Horizon. There's a series of issues that have been identified by the Commission as challenges with the current funding today for innovation. These are, you know, just very quickly, complex and fragmented funding landscape, lack of funding continuity in the investment journey, so from research up to the market, limited coordinated strategic focus, untapped potential to mobilize private capital, high complexity for the beneficiaries. So these are issues, I must say, not the first time I hear about them, also in previous rounds they were pointed, but the ambition and the proposal is to improve on all of those because there's such an urgency. So turn it to the Competitiveness Fund. It has, you know, it's meant to accompany the whole investment journey from research, because, yeah, the Competitiveness Fund also is there to support research, more advanced, if you like, whereas FP10 would be more more basic. And then it has four key windows, and one of them is digital. As I said, 20 billion in the proposal. Though we're entering into the period where, you know, this proposal is being discussed, and over the next months, it will be a crucial time to decide what will be the priorities and what will be the structures that will be accompanying, supporting those priorities. Underlining that there's an ambition to reduce the number of rules, of programs, of structures. So nothing should be taken for granted there. It is time to really put forward the proposals. We're talking about addressing all the different stages where EU funding can make the difference. So as I said, from research down to almost to the market. And it will be important in putting forward, let's say, the cases for supporting different areas to say, to what is going to be the catalytic effect. For instance, if we talk about connectivity, you know, how it complements, how EU funding can complement what industry is doing, what academics are doing, others are doing. It will be important to, let's say, kind of argue for the enabling role of specific areas like the connectivity, how is it important, how it interplays with artificial intelligence for that matter, and the potential. The potential, it would be important to discuss about the potential, but not just the impact, not just potential impact, but what has been achieved already, what is achieved today. Even when arguing for research, it is important to say, and on the market, the research that we did 10 years ago, this is where it makes a difference. And who is going to decide about this? I just recall, many of you know, but those who are going to decide are member states and the European Parliament. So these are the people to talk to, and that's what will happen over the next months and years. I'll stop here. Thanks.
Thank you, sir, for that very comprehensive overview of what's going on with FP10. Sounds like a lot of money is also involved there, so maybe you can retire as well at the same time as the people with the high share price, so that's wonderful. Sylvia, maybe you'd be kind enough to introduce yourself and give your point of view, please.
So I have one message, and first, supply chain resilience. So first of all, my name is Sylvia Liu. I'm an independent advisor and also an executive director. So I serve on the board of Cambridge Wireless, deputy chair, but also Advisory Board of UK Telecom Innovation Network, provide independent advice to the UK government. I'm also co-run a Silicon Catalyst ChipStart UK program, which is an incubator for nurturing and support the next generation of semiconductor startups. So three cohorts, 30 companies. We managed to help them to get 40 million investment through the 3 years period. So my background has been always in the telecom and semiconductor. And my first job at 2G, I've seen a lot of ups and downs in this industry. So one of the key fundamental building blocks, certainly my colleagues mentioned connectivity, telecom, really the chipsets, the chips are the building blocks supporting power, our smartphones, our cars, GPS, GNSS, and also satellites. Yet, European only produce 9% of the global semiconductors. So, of course, EU Act, CHIP Act, was built to enable 2 times more of that market share. Is that good enough? It's a question mark here. Also, it takes time to really build that supply chain. So supply chain-wise, highly concentrated. If you think about Taiwan, 60% of the manufacturing, global manufacturing, has actually happened in Taiwan. And 90% of the advanced nodes are produced there. So 90%. So if there's single vulnerability in that supply chain, it's a huge risk, which again, back to that supply chain resilience, I think this vulnerability, strategic vulnerability we need to address, and this long-term strategy and vision. We need to put certain money fund, not just to enable the next generation semiconductor players, but also look at where we are strong and where are the places we need to make sure that we don't fall behind. So that's the semiconductor point of view. So back to you, Colin.
Thank you, and thank you for giving another point of view in the semiconductor. I think that's great. Ingemar, maybe I could come back. You were mentioning that there are US firms coming to work with you here because they see advantage. Could you expand on that? Because that's not a message that we hear every day. We hear God knows how often, they started off in Europe and then jumped to the US because of this, that, and the other. I think it's a very interesting angle where you say, well, it's not just one-way traffic. Perhaps you could explain this.
First of all, Europe is not very good at sales. We don't promote ourselves as good as Americans do. There are facts and there are perceptions. Our facts are probably not super great,
yep,
but they are not that bad as we are normally perceiving those, whereas both China and the United States are particularly focused,
yep,
on kind of, let's call it the PSYOPs these days, or and that creates an extra psychological load, which is detrimental for investment. And because if you get this feeling that everything is happening in the United States, probably that is something we're also seeing, with that the ratio of inventions in European universities is actually not bad, but the commercialization, yeah, is happening in the United States, which is also somewhat a function. One thing is, of course, function of capital available, but this is also somewhat also a psychological thing. But regarding your question, is there are some benefits of being small. Mm-hmm. Not many, though, but there are some. So we're a small country, so we are just faster. So there's one more psyops that Europe is being portrayed as super bureaucratic, but the reason why Americans can come here because of lots of bureaucracy in the United States, it just stems from a different source. Here we, of course, blame Brussels for everything, but in the United States, there is, first of all, legal system is very bureaucratic with all the precedents, and also big government institutions. So if the DoD wants to agree on some, let's say, military tests involving jamming, they have to. There's a year of agreement with Federal Aviation authority. So this is something we can actually do faster. So we have pulled together the ecosystem faster. All the agreements and permits and everything is faster. So, and also a sense of urgency, particularly in the sense of defense, of course, being as close to Russia as we are, we have a common sense of urgency across all the stakeholders here, which is definitely not the case in the United States or farther west in Europe. So that's urgency, effective ecosystem, and focus on practicality creates this value why actually we have these friends coming over here.
Mm. I think it's a very interesting insight because we often talk about fragmented Europe and the fact that we don't seem to be able to have that single digital market. Indeed, we'll come back to that in a second. But this is a case where we almost use that fragmented market to advantage because, you know, you're living in a country that is so digitally aware, so active, so alive, so able to do things in a fast period of time. In some ways, not being tied to Brussels is almost an advantage in this case.
But still, I think we should also value, I mean, probably, again, there is this tradition in Europe on dispersing this innovation funds that the principle makes different countries come together and make this consortia, and I think this is a great value. Yep. Particularly for us, we've made such a great network of partnerships all across the Europe just because of this principle. I think this is somewhat mimics the effect that the United States is getting because just being a single market and single ecosystem. So this is somewhat solving that thing. And also we should probably see there's nothing positive about the war in Ukraine, of course, but right now some signs of wake up in Europe is probably happening. We could definitely talk of some rearmament.
Yeah.
Probably happening in the next 10 years. Massive amount of funds will be thrown into rearming Europe, and that actually means great opportunity for innovation as well, classically, because defense industry is full of legacy capex that has to be, so to speak, somewhat. The big old classical defense companies are doing that same old thing. They are creating super exquisite, super cool gear, but in very limited numbers. War in Ukraine and other theaters around the world show the different pictures. So you have to have disruptive technology at scale. So there's a lot of place for new innovation, and so many civilian companies these days are growing into this in innovation and competitiveness by hiring military personnel, plugging them into the corporate system so you can actually be part of this next 10 years innovation cycle.
Thank you, sir. Ali, you were saying that your vision mm-hmm. is to have this ability where companies can migrate seamlessly from one cloud to another. What is the sticking point here? What is the key thing that needs to happen before this vision is reality?
I mean, yesterday I also mentioned that I had these stickers written that there is no cloud, it's just someone else's computer. And that's the reality, basically. But you cannot host your data in your own computer because of the scalability, because of the many things and services. So you need to have trust. If you want your neighbor to hold your data, yep. you need to have a certain level of trust. And somehow this trust is forgotten with the hyperscalers, with those SaaS solutions and tempting softwares they are offering. But we need to come back to this. This trust is not between customers and cloud. It's also between the cloud companies and other solutions. We also started initiatives like SECA, which is a pillar for European stack, to have European companies, it started from German cloud providers, to have a cloud API. So you should have an interface seamlessly to this interface and use the services from different vendors without even noticing it. So if we are lacking in one services, the other partner offers these services. This can be extended, as I said, like a cloud marketplace can be a solution, for example.
Yeah.
So we know that some parts we have strengths, the other parts maybe our competitor offers better solutions. So we are open to that. We are open to accept this in order to compete with the hyperscalers. I think this is the solution and this is the strategy we need to make instead of just dumping money in one cloud solution and saying that this will be the successor. and has to compete with the hyperscalers. I don't see that's the right way. Also, when talking about cloud, it's not just the data centers and servers, it's the entire stack. For example, energy, green energy. Green energy is not just environmental things, it's independency from Russia's energy. So we need to be independent for chips, for example. We need to be independent so that we can claim that we are sovereign. If we say that bring your data to our data centers, then you are sovereign, that's not a true sovereignty.
Thank you, sir. Michele, what's the vision for how you would like to see mobile communications funded in FP10 or in the next framework? And how can we leverage that or evolve how we are funding to better tie in with some of these other areas and strengthen some of these other areas for Europe?
I think something that comes to my mind that I would like to use at a certain point is, for instance, when I was seeing the submissions to the 60 standardization process that started this year with a workshop in Korea, and I was noting that, you know, some names there, Google, Apple, Meta, I'm not sure they were there. You would know, Corey, but I'm not sure they were there at the time 5G standards were decided. So that's something I would like to. So obviously they're not just there to see what's happening. Obviously they're up to something, and that's an indication. So the vision has to say has to be for me. I mean, the case has to be made that this is an ecosystem and connectivity. Is at the core of it. I think a couple of things have happened recently that help, and we heard about them yesterday. 5G standalone, for that matter, is picking up in industrial settings, and you can see the impact. And it's picking up more in other parts of the world, actually, in China and the United States, and they're investing big time. So that's another important element to bring to the table in discussions, to say, hey, these are the figures of the investments that these other competitors are making. They are not just doing that for nothing. And then something that has happened also, it's a realization, I think, and not so long ago, that you need an ecosystem, you need several things, like, you know, in order to deliver AI and all these wonders, you need actually not just connectivity, but you need electricity. You need water. You need, you know, and I think that's the fact of, this realization that electricity is something, I think the connectivity is going to benefit from that. But just to conclude, I think it would be important, calling not just to make the case of connectivity as an enabler, but also as a player. Also as a player. And that in order to have artificial intelligence, you just don't need to throw lots of money into data centers and, you know, things are happening at the edge and will happen more and more. And there, you know, the connectivity players have something to say. Network APIs, a number of things. So those two things, enabling, absolute necessary enabler, but a very important player with assets. And let's leverage the strengths that we have there. I think this is how I see, you asked me about vision. Vision, yes, I have that vision, but also I have this kind of, I'm kind of fixated on what are going to be the steps to arrive there, because this is what it's going to be about over the next months.
Super, thank you. Sylvia, we have the situation certainly in the current research landscape that it's very difficult to bridge across the various different silos. So we have SNSJU, which is the JU for mobile communications, if you will, cellular systems. And then we have the CHIPS JU, which you mentioned earlier, where a lot of money has been investing. But it seems very difficult between these two to have collaboration. How can we improve this in the future? How can we somehow bring these silos together? Because clearly microelectronics is vitally important, as you're saying, but how can we bridge that gap? How can we make them actually talk to each other? Or more importantly, how can we get the right result for Europe, which is a combined holistic view?
Thanks, Colin. That's a really good question. One of the fundamental issues that we are observing as well. So to start with, Europe has been have the strength, right? So we do have the strength in semiconductor equipment and materials, and these are the areas which we'd like to put more efforts on. So it's sort of, if you like, explore and exploit model. That's what I'm looking at it. So within that exploit, sort of 80% of your focus area, perhaps we can do a landscaping to see which incubators or which research projects are looking at those areas, whether that's photonics or EDI design tools, right? So then you have the strategic remit to really invest and then create that channel between the public-private joint funding scheme to really level them up. And then you have the longer term 20% exploit topics, which could be a moonshot projects. And that's where the FP10 might be able to help, because it's looking longer term and give the assurance as well to those new pipeline of startups, the confidence to invest those innovation and spend energy and resources. I think we can take a more holistic view using that exploit and explore model and target it, the investment and focus area to those companies who are building those technologies. So Chipstart UK, we have 12 companies at the moment, and we are expanding that model to Europe. So we're taking 12 companies this year in Europe, and there's a conference in Malta, if you guys are interested, to see what's going on, sort of dynamics of the European semiconductor ecosystem. So that's in 2 weeks in Malta. And that's opportunity, Colin, as well, really bring that awareness to see what's going on, creating that momentum. We're happy to help.
Super. Great that you managed to get the marketing in there as well. I really appreciate that. I think we want that commercial aspect to this panel, so thank you. No, thank you for the thing. Let me then open it up to the audience, see if you're awake, see if we have any questions or anything electronic.
Yes, we do. Actually, okay. Two questions on our Slido platform. Please do send in those questions and vote with those thumbs on the top questions that you would like to be asked here on the stage. And a question from Dean Bubbly, right here. Maybe you want to ask them yourself. Should I read it? How do you want to do it?
No, I can ask it.
Oh, sure. We'll get you a mic so we hear you. You're the first person brave enough to ask something in a voice. Here you go.
I always like asking questions live. And I always like the fact that we all have wireless microphones and none of them use 5G or will likely use 6G.
Have you checked?
Yeah. I speak to the AV people a lot. Why is there no European leadership strategy for Wi-Fi? It's one of the most strategic wireless technologies. We use it all the time at home, in business places, in industry, and yet there is almost no European presence. There's a couple of small companies like Mikrotik, but we don't do any academic work on it. There's no European sort of Wi-Fi university or anything like that. It seems to be an obvious gap.
It's an interesting question. Whether we have the right expertise on the panel, I'm not sure. Does anyone want to have a go at this?
I'm probably completely opposite person to answer your question, because our strategy 10 years ago as a mobile operator was specifically to kill Wi-Fi. So we did everything possible. We noticed that the uptake of consumer usage of Wi-Fi grows faster than mobile data, so we got worried that that's we were not competing to other operators, we were competing to technology. So we created all the pricing models, went fully flat rate, and killed Wi-Fi consumption in public. So we were very proud of that. And in that sense, that's the reason why Latvian customers use the most mobile data on the planet, is because of this strategy, how to actually oppose Wi-Fi, whilst many operators were attending conferences on how to offload your data to Wi-Fi and all sort of crazy topics like this, and giving away their customers and money. So I think part of our success was focusing. But from the technological perspective, we actually see very nice integration. Lots of our use cases right now, particularly also in defense, they use 5G as a core, as a brain, and actually creating mesh of different networks, being that other mobile operators, satellite communication, field radios, and also Wi-Fi. So there are just different use cases, so there is some friendship still possible.
Super. Okay.
Yes, quickly. Wi-Fi, we all use Wi-Fi, it's very useful, but you said that there was a gap in EU policy. The EU policy is to support 5G and 6G, and I don't think, let's see if, I'm not sure we will get it wrong. Let's see how things evolve, but that's what the policy line is, in a nutshell.
And maybe the other point to make is looking at the value of those markets. Why are we concentrating on cellular communication? Because that's where the money is. If you look at how much the market is worth, there are some players, obviously Cisco and what have you, with their routers, but generally, certainly for the access, it's nothing in comparison. Okay, other questions from the audience? No, you will want lunch, fair enough.
Yeah, 5 minutes till the end, so you can wrap it up.
Okay. Then, to wrap it up in our 5 minutes, which single action would help in this goal to try and make Europe more competitive in this ICT world? It's a lovely, lovely, easy question in about a minute. Just dictate what we need to do. So what's the single action we need to do? Ingmar, please.
Two things. One thing is probably...
Oh, I'm not sure. I think I said one thing. Okay, no, I'll give you two.
Exceeding
two.
The expectations.
Okay, right.
So two things. One thing is that we still should understand that the best place on planet to be human is Europe. That's our key competitive advantage. Nowhere else you can be as human as you are in Europe. That's one. Second thing, somehow... Everything is quite nice, other than that the corporations are not making enough profit out of innovation. So some pressure, somehow, somebody, somewhere, I don't know why, but what exactly, honestly, but somehow European corporations have to be, it's not just NGO kind of Brussels kind of stuff that has to be happening, which is actually happening. Brussels is doing their share of innovation funding. So corporate, I mean, if there's no profit, no fun.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Okay, thank you. I mean, that was a very brave statement that Europe is the best place to live on a rainy, cold Riga day. If you've been outside,
well,
you might. Anyway,
we'll leave that.
That's a bold. We like bold statements. Ali, where's your bold statement, what we need to do?
I think the blocker here is the trust, as I mentioned. Maybe we can have a common understanding of the certifications like GDPR, AI Act, that, or third-party audit for the companies. Will bring trust to companies to use their solution and collaborate and partner together. For example, in Germany, we have the C5 certificates for cloud companies, and we have random audits and regular audits, so we can say that. We can not just claim, and we can prove that we are a trusted provider. That can be Europe-wise, and that can be understood by the customer that when they have this certificate, I can trust them. So I think the certification is something that can be done to gain more trust from the business to business and business to customer perspective.
Is Europhide a word? Europhide? I mean, I know what you mean, but it's interesting. Yeah, but no, I understand what you're saying. Miguel, please.
So, simple but difficult question. I would say, I want to say as a simple answer, focus on demand. Whatever works, whatever sells. Public demand, using public procurement as a leverage. Our competitors are doing it. China is doing it. The United States is doing it when you see the procurement of federal agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Big time. And, of course, the private side, you know, the verticals, you know, what is working there. Yeah, and I support that,
super.
I would say.
And a final word, Sylvia, please.
Well, two words. strategic realism, which means focus on focus on the strength of the European Union, which in the semiconductor space, that's about chip design and also semiconductor equipment and material.
Yeah.
And they expand to adjacent layers to increase our influence, which again, in the semiconductor space, that's about packaging, advanced packaging, for example, in the short term, but also in the long term, onshore some of the fabs here rather than have that concentration abroad. So that's my two words.
Lovely, super. Then thank you very much for a lovely panel. Let's thank the panelists, please.
And a round of applause to Colin. Thank you. Thank you for being entertaining as well. Job well done.